It's time for TWiT. This week at Tech, Jerry Pournelle joins us. He's feeling much better after his stroke. We'll talk to him. We'll eulogize Leonard Nimoy with Jason Snell and Jason Heiner, all people with J's in the name. And, of course, the FCC decision, plus a report live from Mobile World Congress. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 499, recorded March 1st, 2015. Live long and prosper. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get two free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by ShipStation.com. When you're selling online, getting your orders out the door quickly can be tough. ShipStation.com is the fast, easy way to manage and ship all your orders all in one place. For a free 2-month trial, visit ShipStation.com. And before you do anything else, click the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in TWiT. ShipStation.com. And by NatureBox. NatureBox ships great-tasting snacks right to your door. Start snacking smarter with wholesome, delicious treats like chocolate, hazelnut, granola. Wow! To get your complimentary NatureBox sampler, visit NatureBox.com/TWiT. That's NatureBox.com/TWiT. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Go to squarespace.com and enter the offer code TWIT at checkout to get 10% off. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the week's tech news. And holy cow, what a week it has been. But we have assembled such a great panel. I'm really thrilled about it, starting with Jason Heiner of the Tech Republic. Hi, Jason.
Hey, thrilled to be here, as ever.
At Jason Heiner on the Twitter, CBS Interactive owns the Tech Republic. And your new book is coming out chapter by chapter. I'm excited about this. We'll give you a plug in a little bit. We got so much to do. I'm going to have to monitor my time carefully here. Jason Snell is also here.
So many Jasons.
Yeah, Jason Howell running the board. Jason Snell from SixColors.com at JS Snell. Former executive editor of Macworld, PC World, IDG. He now does his own blog at SixColors.com. And some really good podcasts, including The Incomparable. And I'm thrilled to welcome Jerry Pournelle back to our microphones. I don't need to say much. Jerry Pournelle, one of the great science fiction writers, a man who inspired my own career with Chaos Manor, the column in Byte magazine for many years. He's at jerrypournelle.com. And Jerry, we'd heard around December your son tweeted that you'd had a stroke.
Yeah, I had on the 15th of December, I had a mild stroke, but as you can see, I'm pretty well recovered. I can stand up. I'm in a wheelchair, but I can stand up. I get around all right, and I talk now. I didn't at first. I was, and that was horrible, but I've got that back, too, and I've got two books going.
Wow.
Most of which are being Niven and I are doing one with Steve Barnes. I do the plotting. They do the work.
I think plotting.
I've got another one with John DeChancey. Same thing. I do the plot and they do the work.
So you're feeling okay? You're fully recovered?
I'm feeling very good. I don't walk without a walker, but otherwise you'd never know.
I'm practically a can't walk without a walker, so I don't. And you had brain cancer, and
I had brain cancer in 2008.
Jeez.
And I survived that with 50,000 rads of radiation. I'm hoping I've kind of got over all the bad things that can happen to you.
You're kind of like Rasputin. They just can't kill you, Jerry. We're so glad. Welcome back. It's great to have you. And one of the reasons I wanted you on, we'll talk about the FCC's decision in just a bit. Before we get to that, of course, Mobile World Congress is going on right now. Some big announcements already this morning. Before we get to that, We should probably mention that Leonard Nimoy passed away on Friday at the age of 83. In fact, his memorial service is going on, I think, as we speak. William Shatner, Captain Kirk, was reporting that he wasn't going to be able to go. He had a prior commitment, a charity event that he, you know, really couldn't reasonably get out of to go to Mr. Spock's funeral. But the good news, apparently, is that Shatner was able to get on a plane. And so he's going to be there. I know that there was...
Oh, good.
Yeah, he was memorializing Leonard Nimoy on Twitter. There was a, kind of a furor when he said he couldn't go. But, you know, once you understand it's a charity event. And I love this billboard. Could you zoom in on that billboard? This billboard was put out up in L.A., I think, I'm told, near Shatner's home. Is that right?
I think it's a, and it's one of these electronic billboards. I saw somebody who said they saw it in Atlanta, too.
Oh, so maybe it's all over. And it's a picture, of course, of Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock making the Vulcan live long and prosper sign. And we're all going to do that right now and think about Mr. Spock. And I love the epitaph. He did. He did. Yeah. So.
Thumb out.
Yeah. Yeah, an amazing fellow and much beloved. Mm-hmm. And deservedly so. And I know Jerry and I were talking because, Jerry, you know Gene Roddenberry, or you knew Gene Roddenberry pretty well, I think.
Yes, yes.
As a sci-fi writer. And
Gene and I were at a conference at the Smithsonian for a while and then at the Library of Congress.
But you didn't know Nimoy.
Interesting conference. There were a couple of Nobel Prize winners. There was Sir Fred Hoyle. There was Gene Roddenberry, there was me, and there were 15 unpublished Washington poets. And I asked the librarian, why 15 unpublished Washington poets? And he said, who do you think is paying for it? Their husbands do. So these ladies sat in the back of the room, and we sat at a conference table in the Coolidge Library, and we had a week-long conference on science fiction and literature.
There are some really beautiful tweets in Leonard Nimoy's Twitter stream. His last tweet was several years ago. One of the tweets, I wish I hadn't smoked. He had quit smoking 30 years ago, but passed away from COPD.
You went.
Yeah.
Some effects. Is this right?
The real Nimoy.
Oh, the real Nimoy. No wonder. The real Nimoy. This is the fake Nimoy. There we go. And this actually features tweets from other folks, I guess.
Yeah, his last tweet was just earlier this week.
Amazing. Really amazing.
And then they've been retweeting various condolences.
And the account is retweeting memorialization. So just some really...
Yeah, his last tweet was, a life is like a garden. Perfect moments can be had, but not preserved, except in memory. Live long and prosper.
Wow. Okay, now I'm going to cry. Thanks a lot.
He wins for best last tweet ever, I think. You can
holy
close the books
cow.
On that one.
Pretty prophetic.
Oh, holy cow. Well, I think he knew he was on his way out.
Yeah.
All right. Let me dry my tears a little bit. You didn't know Nimoy, Jerry.
I never met him, actually. I don't think I did. We may have been at an agency party or something at the same time, but I never actually met him.
Yeah. Well, there you go. What can you say? Mobile World Congress going on right now in Barcelona. We actually have two reporters there. Mike Elgin of TNT is there, and he'll be reporting all week long on TNT and TN2 from Barcelona. Miriam Joar is there as well. The conference itself won't kick off till tomorrow, but things have already started in some ways. Huawei announced its first Android Wear watch, the first Android Wear watch with a sapphire crystal. The TalkBand B2 activity tracker and the N1 earbud hybrid. Acer announced the Liquid M220. Yes, a Windows phone on a budget. Which means it's not going to be a high-end Windows phone. Everybody's waiting to hear if there'll be anything at Mobile World Congress like the Nokia 1520s. Microsoft is there, but they've even said, I think, we're not going to announce any new high-end Windows phones. And, of course, the other two big companies that were most interested in, HTC and Samsung, both had events. Miriam Joar was at the HTC event where they unveiled the HTC M9. She had this report.
Hey there, it's Miriam Schwar with the Twit Network, and this is the HTC M9 here at Mobile World Congress 2015. As you can tell, it's very much an evolution of the original HTC One M7 and M8. This particular device is actually an interesting shade combination. The edges here are gold, with the back being silver, which is quite a nice color combination. So what's changed since last year? It's a same beautiful display, a 5-inch 1080p display with Snapdragon 810 this year. And the other thing you have to keep in mind is the camera has obviously changed quite a bit. There's a 20-megapixel autofocus camera now, with, instead of the 4-megapixel ultrapixel camera from the previous two models. However, the ultrapixel camera is now located in the front, up here, as a selfie camera. So that's one of the changes. And finally, everything else is more or less where you'd expect it to be for this phone. You get the same SIM trays in the same places, buttons on the same places, micro SD card slot expansion, headphone jack, and micro USB, which is hidden here by this security attachment. But basically, that's the HTC One M9. Very much an evolution of last year's design. 3 gigs of RAM, 32 gigs of storage. Yep, that's it. Here at Mobile Congress 2015 in Barcelona.
Thank you, man.
Cheers.
Cheers. HTC, I guess, decided not to improve on what many consider the best Android phone of the year. Certainly the best design, mm-hmm. although they still have HTC Sense, yeah. HTC Blink. Jason, you like this phone?
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it's an evolution. I mean, it was probably the best design Android phone, as it were, in terms of, you know, really slick and, you know, wow factor.
I think the thing that kept a lot of people from buying it was the camera, frankly. The 4-megapixel mm-hmm. camera, that's just not, that's a non-starter. And a 20-megapixel improved that considerably. They also are doing what everybody's going to do, which is much better front-facing cameras. Originally, I think front-facing cameras are all about Skype. Now it's clear, selfie. They're the selfie cameras.
Yeah.
So they're putting the ultrapixel on the front and a 20-megapixel on the back. That wasn't the only thing HTC announced. They also announced the Vive, which is very much like an Oculus Rift. It's a Steam-focused VR helmet. They're doing it with Valve. Is this going to be just for using with Steam or what?
It'll be interesting because, you know, this VR stuff I was pretty skeptical of it, you know, all around. But this is really picking up steam this year.
So to speak. They did pick up steam, literally.
Literally picking up steam. Oh, sorry, bad pun.
You didn't even know it, did you?
I didn't even know it.
Yeah.
But in terms of VR, you know, the platform itself, as a platform, it's picking up steam. I'm hearing about all kinds of interesting business uses for this stuff right now. A lot of it around Oculus Rift, clearly, as a platform. And so it'll be interesting. You know, the platform is the interesting play with this. You know, can they do that through Steam? Maybe. Or is there kind of going to be something else that can kind of ride on top of that? But, you know, there are companies that are coming out with some really interesting stuff in the months ahead in terms of what they're doing with business uses. Some of these are public, some of them aren't. But things like Marriott letting you go and use that to look at resorts, for example, and actually get a full walkthrough, you know, of it is one. Toyota has talked about doing some things, has announced the things that they're doing with helping people, you know, drivers, especially teen drivers, go through some scenarios that can help them be safer drivers using VR. And so there are some really interesting practical uses. And so I think these guys jumping into this game with the new product is you know, kind of justifies the fact that there's just a lot of great stuff happening in that space, and it's not just games.
I feel like I'm more excited about Microsoft's HoloLens and augmented reality than I am about virtual reality. It doesn't have the same issue with kind of seasickness, queasiness, and every time I put on the Oculus Rift, I feel like I need a cold compress. And I also think it's a lot harder to create content for a virtual world than it is to do what Microsoft's doing with the HoloLens. They will have the HoloLens, they say, this fall, I'm wondering, Windows 10. And I wonder if that's going to maybe – I feel like that's going to end this whole infatuation with VR. To me, VR is like 3D. It's a gimmicky – what do you think?
I think it's it depends on who you are. I think that you're not as excited about the possibilities for gaming. I mean, for gaming and maybe for some of these things that Jason Heiner was just talking about where you need to be completely immersive. And it's a completely different thing.
Yeah, but it's hard to do immersive well. These aren't,
yes, it is.
They're not very high-res screens. There is latency, which is what makes you seasick.
But I don't think it's an either-or because the HoloLens, you know, that is overlay technology, and that's going to be for things that might be game-related but are also just other real-world things. It's much more what people, I think, thought Google Glass was going to be, except it wasn't, where you can overlay, you know, internet information on what you're seeing. And the VR stuff is just totally different. It's blocking out the real world entirely. Right. And there may be a place for that. I worry that there's some... we see an announcement like this, HTC announcement, and we think, oh, great, it's another Oculus Rift. I wonder if there's a disparity in terms of the technology involved. That would be the danger as a consumer.
You don't want to split it.
If you buy the HTC and it turns out that it's kind of lower-grade tech and that Oculus is really the one that's got so much that they've invented that makes their product better, you're kind of in trouble.
It could stall it.
We just don't know.
It could be like beta versus VHS.
It could be.
Jerry, you must have, you know, at SIGGRAPH for 20 years, they've had various virtual reality devices. Are you a virtual reality buff, Jerry?
Well, I point out that 20 years is a million times better in technology, at least in current trends.
Yeah.
And a million times better than what we have now, basically, is good enough.
It's immersive.
Exactly. I mean, the holodeck from the TV shows is likely to be reality by that time.
I'm hoping they have it soon so you and I can hang out without leaving our living rooms.
Well, it's getting close to that now. But even Skype is pretty good compared to what we used to have.
It's true. Louis C.K. was right. We're sitting here wanting VR, and here I am. You're in L.A. We're up in Northern California, and Jason's in Knoxville. Where are you? Louisville. And I can never get that right. Yeah, one of these days. And it's as if we're all sitting around a table. So in a way, we've got something kind of we're getting.
Exactly. Leo, it's like I'm actually here.
I can't believe how real.
It's wow. I am that realistic.
Wow, you feel real.
I know, but I'm actually a HoloLens. It's crazy.
HTC also announced a – I feel like this is a little bit of a me too. They, you know, well, Galaxy VR, Galaxy Gear VR, you know, Samsung's got it. We got to have it. Everybody's got a smart band, so we got to have one. HTC did a deal with Under Armour, and they announced the first HTC wearable – not an Android Wear smartwatch, but a GPS-enabled fitness tracker called The Grip. Grip's got a grip on me, The Verge. Oh, no, we're going to have to look at an ad. I don't want to look at an ad. The Grip, kind of reminiscent a little bit of the Nike Wear, Fuel Band,
right.
And a little bit of the Microsoft Band. It looks big. It looks clunky. Multi-sport mode, finally, it says, can track activities from running to cycling. A lot of these devices really are just pedometers that can work with running and walking and not much more. But also, Samsung had its Samsung Unpacked 2015 this morning. We got up early, did a live special covering the keynote. Very nice keynote, considering Samsung's previous amazingly bad efforts.
Yeah.
In fact, they even had two women do most of the presenting, which was Samsung had been accused kind of a tone-deaf idea of women in previous events. This was much better. Miriam Jouar took a look at the Galaxy S6 at the demo room after the keynote, and she had this report. Miriam?
Hey there, it's Miriam with the Twit Network, and this here is the Galaxy S6 Edge here at Mobile Congress 2015. Yeah, it's Samsung's latest and greatest, and it is a very, very nice phone, I have to say. So here you can see it's shiny in the back, some sort of glass or plastic finish. And of course, this is the Edge. So it has this kind of curved Edge display, as you can see here, which is very unique. It's similar to what was on the Note Edge last fall, but it doesn't actually have buttons on it. They're just using it as a way to keep this really smooth, curved Edge. It's very, very nice. So this is a Quad HD display, 5.1 inches. This is very high res, same resolution as the Note 4, but on a smaller display. As you can see, the chassis is made of metal on the edges here. So that's pretty cool. Very nicely done. And in the back is a new improved camera. It has optical image stabilization and an f over 1.9 lens. You can also still see the heart rate monitor that was present in last year's Galaxy S5 and is also available on the Note 4. So, yeah, this is a powerhouse. Inside, you'll find Samsung's own Exynos processor. It's quad-core. Of course, 3 gigs of RAM. Lots of storage, something like 32, 64. There's no micro SD card slot, no expansion, no removable battery this year. This is a very new thing for Samsung. They usually have removable batteries and micro SD as a selling point. You see the volume rocker up here, the headphone jack. Actually, no, that's the infrared port. And headphone jack's on the bottom, where the micro USB charger data port is, that's obstructed by this safety device here. Home button, of course. So, yeah, the Galaxy S6 Edge here at Mobile Congress. Really light, really nice phone. Cheers.
That's saying a lot, because Miriam is a big HTC fan and has been for some time. Samsung announced two versions of the Galaxy, one that's got basically a flat screen like an existing Galaxy phone, and the Edge, which is not like the current Edge. The current Edge is two screens, one curved and one flat, and they show different things. This one is one, looks like one Super AMOLED screen that is curved around the front,
right?
Which I like better, frankly. People have seen it, including Miriam, say it looks gorgeous. It does have some of the capability of the current Edge. You can have an Edge display, but not nearly the capabilities of the current Edge, which is fine. I thought that was a mistake. Samsung did say no more removable battery, but we are going to have very high speed charging, and we'll support both wireless standards, Qi and PowerMat, which is great news, I think.
Very cool.
Yeah, no SD card, but as Miriam said, 32, 64, and 128 gig versions. So that's probably better than having an SD card in most respects.
Why would it be better to have a removable card?
A removable card's great because you can take it out and maybe copy stuff to it and so forth, or you can have multiple cards. But on most platforms, this SD card isn't an equal to internal SD storage. And so having large capacity internal storage means you don't have to worry about where I'm storing apps. Most apps cannot be moved to the SD card. No app with a widget can be moved to the SD card. So having it all internal, having sufficient internal storage, I think gives you most of the capability you'd want an SD card for.
And puts you at the mercy of the cloud.
Well, 128 gigs, Jerry. I don't think you're going to need much cloud storage if you get a giant one like that. In fact, maybe. That's as much storage as you're going to be able to put in. I guess you could put in a 128 gig SD card.
But it does put you at the mercy of their pricing of that memory, which,
well,
if it were, you know, a separate slot, you get that memory probably for a lot less than what they're going to price it
they
at.
They are using eMMC memory, which is the same memory used, I think, in the solid-state drives. It's a lot faster than the flash storage in existing phones. That's a big improvement. It looks like they've made massive improvements to the camera, including Miriam said, F1.9. And the fingerprint reader is much more like Touch ID on Apple. The current fingerprint reader on the S5 and the Note 4, you have to swipe. It's kind of like the laptop fingerprint readers where you swipe your finger along it. Now it's just going to be like the Touch ID on Apple's where you just put your finger on it. They also announced their own payment system, Samsung Pay, which will, I'm assuming, continue to support the touch-to-pay technologies that Android phones have now with Google Wallet, but also adds Loop Pay, a company Samsung acquired last month that lets you use a swipe card reader by not swiping your phone, but just putting your phone next to the swipe card reader. It puts out a magnetic field, which the swipe card reader misinterprets as an actual magnetic strip. And I know people have used Loop Pay. Jeff Needles in our office uses it, and he says it works quite well. So Samsung said at their event, we will support more payment terminals than anybody, including Apple Pay, because of this acquisition of Loop Pay.
And more ways to better the system.
Well, you know, and that's Andy Anako raised that question, he'd like to see, and I would too, if it's possible to maybe snag that magnetic field on its way to the Stripe reader. But one good thing, Samsung's doing, just as Apple is doing, the same kind of tokenization of, there's no credit card transfer, it's a single-use token that's passed to the merchant. The merchant doesn't get any information about you. I think that's really good news. Apple Pay has clearly moved the market in that respect.
They're certainly getting there.
I'm excited. I feel like Samsung has put together a very nice phone that, at least design-wise, looks a little bit nice. You pointed out it looks a little bit like an iPhone 6.
Looks a lot like the iPhone 6. I think we talked about the HTC One, which has been the go-to sort of like, you want something really nice like an iPhone that's got that high design and you want an Android phone, that was the go-to. And I look at the Galaxy S6 and I think, well, it might be the Galaxy S6. They got rid of that plastic back that was removable, which meant you could swap the battery and
put it
in a card.
It looked like a Band-Aid in some cases.
And it sometimes looked like a Band-Aid or fake leather.
Yeah.
And now it's this Gorilla Glass back, and it's not removable. And it looks really nice.
Actually, it looks like an iPhone 5 iPhone 6.
Well, I think the edge probably looks a little more like the 6. Yeah. But it looks good. It looks really good.
Yeah, there's the rounded edge of both phones.
I always thought that for the leading Android phone, the Galaxy S models felt a little cheap because they had that plastic back.
They still have that physical home button, but so does Apple.
Yeah.
And now that it's it's a fingerprint reader, so that gives it some justification for existence. They're the only one of the few Android devices that still has physical buttons of on the front face of the phone.
Well,
I'm
going to
definitely get the
edge. And less touch with small phones, but for some people, and everybody's getting older, the bigger the phone, the better within limits. I mean, it gets to the point you can't carry it, but
no, I agree with you, Jerry.
Small.
The world seems to, it's funny because Apple and everybody kind of mock these. I remember when I started carrying a Galaxy Note 1, which is smaller than the 5, the S6 rather. people mocked me. They said, "What is it? A giant Hershey bar you're holding up to your ear?" And now it's just commonplace. I carry a Note 4, which I really like. That's 5 3/4 inches. This is 5.1 inches. This phone will not feel big in anybody's hand. No. I predict it's smaller than an iPhone 6 Plus.
No. It's kind of stopped the momentum of these phones getting bigger and bigger, right? It's like, you know, with this generation of Android devices, they are now sort of evening out, and they're leaving some room for the phablet to sort of do its thing. I think the interesting things about the S6 is, the one thing I like about the S5 and the other Galaxies, because I've had the last couple as my work phone, and I have an iPhone 6 as my personal phone, is Galaxy's bounce. I swear I drop that thing all the time. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just not as careful with it but the nice thing about that plastic is it bounces and it doesn't crack as much. You don't need a case and that kind of thing. I worry especially about this edge. And this thing's got broken screen written all over it.
It's basically entirely made of glass.
Yeah, the front glass,
the back, and the sides.
Like the iPhone 4, which everybody remembers was the, you know how your toast always lands butter side down? Well, it was both sides were buttered because both sides were glass, right? And that's what the case is here. Apple went away from that and went to a metal back so they could reduce the breakage on the back of their phone. But the S6, definitely, you know, there's glass on the back.
It's Gorilla Glass 4, the fourth generation Gorilla Glass, which they say is the hardest glass out there. But glass is glass.
It's not going to be as impervious as that hard plastic was.
Actually, Samsung had some interesting cases for this, including one that's somewhat translucent. We saw in a demo after the event that looks pretty nice. I don't drop it.
I predict there's going to be a lot more breaks with this thing, with the S6, especially the Edge. There's going to be a lot of breaks. And, you know, for whatever reason, I know that it looks great. I mean, I don't know why they made one with an Edge and without. The one with the Edge looks so much better. And it's sort of weird. It's not a feature you're going to really buy the phone for. So I think that's sort of strange. They should have just made one device. If they want to go with this Edge concept, just do it and make that part of your design. But that's not really their style. But I think that, you know, it's not as practical a phone, but it looks a lot better. And it is an incremental upgrade. Again, I mean, they're doing all the right things as a fast follower. That's kind of their game, is to play fast follower. And, you know, they play it better than anybody. And you know, this does set them up to kind of reclaim some lost mojo. They've got a lot of competition coming from Huawei and Xiaomi and others, you know, especially the Chinese manufacturers.
Yeah, but they're still not selling in the U.S. Nobody, none of the Xiaomi or Huawei, they're not selling in the U.S.
They will be soon, though. I mean, Huawei is in. Huawei is again, and I think it's only time. But also,
I love the new Mi 4 is beautiful, and the Mi Note's great. We just looked at the new Huawei. Miriam brought a few of those in, and some pretty nice stuff out there.
But I think they can do really well being everywhere but the U.S. too. I mean, you know, Samsung does well in the U.S., but they know U.S. is Apple owns the U.S. market more than ever.
Is that fair? I thought it was more like 50-50.
Yeah, well, as a vendor, Apple's way out in front. You know, you compare them to all of Android. You know, it's a different story, but. You know, if you're Samsung, you know, you especially care about Apple head to head, and you know, Apple's selling a lot more devices than Samsung in the U.S. But worldwide, you know, Samsung is killing it. When I go outside the U.S., you know, it's like Samsung is like what Apple is in the U.S. Like everybody's carrying Samsung, you know, and you know, especially in Asia and in Europe. And so I think those other brands and this will, I think, do well in those markets. But they're under seriously intense competition from some of those other vendors, especially the Chinese manufacturers. You know, they hear the footsteps coming with those guys, even if they're not.
Didn't I just read that Apple still takes like half of all profits made by all cell phones?
That I'd believe.
Yeah, way more. It's like, I think it's actually the number just came out this week. We're like 70-80% of the profits.
Last
quarter, it was mostly Apple,
high.
A little Samsung.
Right.
And then most of the other ones didn't even make money.
But in the U.S., Android's easily beats Apple. It's got 61% of the market compared to 32%.
Cumulatively.
For iOS. Cumulatively. And now remember, Samsung's just a part of it, but Samsung's 27% of the U.S. market. Mm-hmm. So it's not that Apple is running away with this by any means. They may be running
just
away
the
with profits, though. In fact, isn't Apple now the biggest?
It's maybe not running away, but it's sure walking fast.
It's
with a bag of money behind
it. Pockets are stuffed with bills. It is worth twice as much as Exxon now.
Well, I mean, right now, Apple and Samsung are the players in the smartphone world.
Samsung almost lost that with the S5. I think it was such a disappointment. Now, people are saying, well, what about the Note? The Note was announced at IFA in September of last year, so a Note 5 would presumably be announced in September of this year. So they're off cycle with the Note and the S6. I think the S6 looks good. I'm going to buy the Edge, and I just try not to drop it.
The last two Galaxy releases were kind of lackluster.
I
was there at the S4, which was one of those embarrassing launch events, too. And, you know, you felt like they were going to not mess with the hardware and they were going to throw in a million different features. And actually, one of the features of the S6 is that they reduced the number of features in the operating system. They actually are stripping out a lot of junk.
No mention of things like the turning pages with your eyes going up and down. Or, you know, I can now use the phone while my fingernails are drying and things like that. They left all of that out. And by the way, announced no other products. The only product they announced at this event today was an updated Gear VR helmet that fits the Note 6. And that's not much of a change. They decided to focus laser-like on the S6 and put their fortunes. And I think they needed to do that, frankly, because the S5 was such a...
I guess I'm just old-fashioned.
What do you use? You use an iPhone, don't you, Jerry?
I use an iPhone. My son uses an S6 and likes it. Though I don't know, it's a big Samsung of some.
Oh, the Note. He probably uses the Note
larger.
4. Yeah, yeah.
I was gonna go down and buy an i6 when I had the stroke, and I haven't got around to it. So I'm still got this old.
Jerry,
iPhone.
We need to send you a new phone. Holy cow.
Well, Apple isn't going to do it. But I'll go buy one when I get a chance to get down to the Apple store.
I think the iPhone 6 is great. And by the way, there may be a reason to carry an iPhone. We'll talk about that in just a second. I'll just quickly wrap up Mobile World Congress coverage. There were a couple of other announcements. Low-end phones are a very big part of the market. We don't talk about it because it doesn't have all those exciting new whizzy features. Yeah. But the low-end phones are huge. Motorola on Wednesday sent us a box with the second generation Motorola G, a very credible, very nice phone, much like the Moto X, but $150 out the door, unsubsidized. Mozilla has announced a flip phone and a slider phone. So if you miss your old flip phone, these are using the Mozilla operating system, which the Firefox operating system is not my favorite in the world, but there's a huge market for inexpensive phones, often with dual SIMs, FM radio features that aren't usually seen in the United States, and of course supporting the wireless bands that are used around the world. This is probably where most of the money is going to be made, I doubt there's much money to be made, but most of the sales are being made.
Yeah. I was going to say there isn't much profit in cheap phones.
No, that's why Apple doesn't do one.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. We have an announcement from Apple coming up. We'll talk about that in just a second. Before we do, though, let's take a break and talk about Audible.com. I'm an audiobook fanatic. Since the esteemed Jerry Pournelle is on with us, we should quickly point out that Jerry and Larry have a number of books available on Audible.com. Some of my favorites. In fact, I'm thinking that most of the books I've read of yours, I've listened to on Audible. The Mote in God's Eye.
They are selling very well.
Good.
We got a huge royalty check from Audible.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. So you don't mind people listening?
I love it.
Good, because that's how I can barely read anymore. I have to listen. The Gripping Hand, that's the sequel to The Moton's Gods. That one came out fairly recently. That's on Audible.com. Footfall, Lucifer's Hammer, which if you haven't read, you're just missing out. Plus a lot of others, High Justice, Janissaries. Some of these are young adult novels, which is great. In fact, Audible's great for younger people, your kids, your teenagers. Often, and research shows this, they get into reading by listening. If they're not into reading yet, get them an Audible book and get them to listen. And research shows that kids who listen to books read more books as well. It gets them going. Doesn't have just to be you with a kid in your lap reading. That you can do it together, though, and we do that actually with Michael. We've been listening to The Lightning Thief, which is a great book for young adults, and he is loving it. And then that gets him reading. In fact, Audible got me reading again. I've always loved reading, but you know, with work and long commutes, I didn't have time to sit down with a book very often. And as you get older, frankly, one page, I'm asleep. Audible's great in the car, at the gym, walking the dog, doing the dishes. We have Audible on in the house almost all the time, both fiction, nonfiction. Let me tell you, if you haven't tried it yet, I've got two books for you, and that's pretty cool. If you go to audible.com/twit and the number 2, audible.com/twit2, you'll be signing up for the Platinum Plan. That's two books a month. Your first month's free. Your first two books are free. You'll also get the Daily Digest of the New York Times, of the Wall Street Journal for free. Cancel anytime in that first day. First month, you'll pay nothing, but the books are yours to keep. I don't think you're going to cancel. But we understand. Maybe you've never listened to audiobooks. You don't know. Audible.com/twit2. Start with maybe a Pournelle Niven classic. When I first joined Audible, they didn't. Jerry says, yeah. When I first started listening to Audible, they were a little disappointing on sci-fi. And then they started the Audible Frontiers program, where they actually record sci-fi in their studios. A lot of books, Heinlein books and stuff that were never in audio, are for the first time available in audio. And it's really great.
They have very good actors and actresses reading them, too.
They do. They're in Newark. They get New York Broadway actors, some really great people. Christopher Hurt doing Stranger in a Strange Land. Wow. That would be something to listen to. In fact, Bronson Pinchot doing Glory Road.
I got a good recommendation.
Go ahead, Jason. What are you listening to?
Yeah, I listened to this great one not too long ago, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks.
Oh, great one. Isn't that a great story? The HeLa.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yes, the HeLa cells. And so, you know, her cells were a major breakthrough. Her cancerous cells were a major breakthrough in science, led to a number of major breakthroughs. And but there's also the story itself is interesting and sad and, you know, disturbing. There's, you know, institutionalized racism. There's all kinds of interesting somewhat disturbing pieces. But the story has a life of its own because her family sued, over this. And because her cells, she didn't necessarily know what they were going to do with their cells and agreed to it. And anyway, it's a fascinating, fascinating story. And it's a great listen. There's almost a performance in there at one point where there's some really amazing stuff that happens, and the voice actor basically goes from sort of reading it to kind of exclaiming. Wow. And there's a great interview with the author at the end that has some great stuff there too. So yeah, great listen.
It's not just somebody reading a book; it really brings the book to life. And it's unless you've experienced it, it's hard to understand how great Audible is. I know, Jason, you're a big Audible fan too. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, it's all I do now is listen to Audible books. I just love it. Audible.com/twit2. Get your first two free today. Apple sent out invitations. You got one.
I did.
Damn your eyes. Invitations to an event 1 week from tomorrow, March 9th.
Monday this time. Monday event.
Is that unusual? They're usually Tuesday?
They've been mostly Tuesday, but they're moving it around now.
This one's going to be at Herba Buena Center, where they've traditionally had their events.
You know, it's 6 months to the day that they announced the Apple Watch.
6 months to the day. Do you think that's significant or just...
It may just be a coincidence, but I expect that we'll be hearing about the Apple Watch. So it's
kind of
funny.
Okay, so the invitation. Actually, this is not the invitation. This is just an image on the invitation.
Below it, it said
Spring Forward.
Spring Forward. And then please come to our
event. It
is
the day after the return of daylight savings time. Yeah. So you will be springing forward the day before. Tim Cook has already said on his earnings call that April is the month. So this is not. We don't expect to get them on Monday.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what to expect. I actually said on a podcast that I didn't think that they would do an event just devoted to the Apple Watch. Well, I think maybe totally wrong. It has been 6 months. They probably got a lot of details to report. They want to get people excited about the watch again in advance. It may be that this is when they also see the press with demo units. That could happen. Usually they only give them. It's not unusual. It would be unusual if they give them to them, 3 weeks before they ship. And if it ships in April, that would be would sort of be the timing. But that wouldn't surprise me if that's what they're doing too. And since this is a different kind of product because we already know that it exists, so they don't have to play as coy as they would with a product that was brand new. We all know that this exists, and in fact, Apple employees wear them around. They they're allowed to. The people who work at Apple who have an Apple Watch are allowed to wear it around. It's not a secret that they're wearing an Apple Watch. They just won't answer any questions about it when you ask them.
Nick Bilton of the Times told us that there are 1,000 Apple employees wearing watches now.
I've seen them, and they're
You've
happy.
Seen them?
They're happy to say, yeah, Apple Watch. They just don't want to talk to you about it.
I read an article that said they're putting it in a Samsung that makes it look like a Samsung
I don't think
watch.
That's true anymore. I think that was when they were working on them
to hide
initially.
Them.
Now everybody knows that they're making a watch.
Right.
They know what it looks
There's nothing
like.
To hide.
They just won't tell you, they're not going to give you a demo. They won't lift up their wrist and say, here, let me show you all the apps. That they're not allowed to do that. But it's out there. So to show that to the media and give members of the media review units and tell more of the story of the Apple Watch wouldn't surprise me if that's what most or all of that event is.
It has to be. I mean, just the fact that it says spring forward. That's such a time.
No, it's a watch.
Exactly. Spring forward's all about setting your clock forward. So,
and it's your Herba Buena, where they usually do these big events.
You want prognostications on the Apple ecosystem? Actually, Jason Snell's a person to follow. If you don't follow him on Twitter, do it. I've been following him for a long time, and talking to him, we go back a long way. And I've asked him off the record on some of this stuff, like, okay, what do you really think is going to happen, coming up? So, and he's usually right. So there you go.
So what's awesome is that you got invited because you've left Macworld.
Right. Well, they invited me to the event in October.
And you'd already left.
Yeah.
You're just a blogger now, dude.
I've got, there are a bunch. They invite Jim Dalrymple. They invite Jod Gruber. Yeah. They invite a bunch of bloggers to it. Renee and Serenity are sort of
Renee, Richie, and Serenity call bloggers. We were talking before the show, and it really is Apple's relationship with you, not with your publication. that determines whether you get an invitation.
I think there's something to that. I think that's not entirely it. I mean, we can go back. Who knows why? And I think the rules are
unless
all changing.
You're at the Times or the Journal or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I think in my case, I mean, I'm trying to start a site that is covering Apple stuff, and they have been. You know, I know them, they know me, and so being in their reviews program and getting a
maybe
review
if someday
review,
I cover more Apple stuff, I could get an invitation. Do you think?
Well, you know, if you put your mind to it and you work really hard, Leo,
that's all right. We will be we'll be there. In fact, you can all be there because they're going to stream it live starting 10 a.m. March 9th Pacific time. That's 1 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. We'll be broadcasting live with our usual snarky coverage. We'll show the stream and then. Andy and Akko and I and Mike and whoever else happens to be around. Jason, you're going.
I'll be there. Sorry.
Show off.
I'll be in the chat room. I'll send you some snark in the chat.
We'll put you in the holodeck and let you experience it through the Twit stream a week from Monday. Any predictions? We know there's three models, two sizes of each. A sport model at $349. That's the only price Apple's announced. Yeah. Are you getting paged by Apple right now?
Mr. Spock is calling me from beyond to beam.
I think it's going to be a huge flop. I'll be honest. I think they'll sell a million in the first weekend. And then after that,
are you kidding me?
First week or whatever.
You think it's going to be a flop?
Yeah.
You and I are the only people that think that. In the world! Apple's apparently, according to supply chain, made more than 5 million. Some say even a lot more than 5 million.
Yeah, I think they were actually downplaying it. Honestly, one of the analysts said that they were going to sell over 20 million, which I think there's no way. There's no way they will sell over 20 million. I won't say because, you know, whatever. But one of the analysts was saying they're going to sell over 20 million of these. And here's what I'm comparing
it to.
In the first year, in 2014 calendar year.
This 2015. So this year.
Sorry, 2015. And Apple, I think, releasing that information that they've made 5 million, I think that was their way of tamping down expectations and saying, you know, because obviously I think they leaked that. And I think that was their way of tamping down expectations for that whole 20 million business that, you know, some of the analysts were saying. Yep. So I think, you know, when the iPad first came out, if we just compare it to the iPad, which was a device that nobody really knew what they needed and what they were going to do with. And everybody expected it to sell 5 million and it sold 15 in its first year. Wow. I think that sort of made sense because there are some things you could do with it.
Was a full computer. A watch is not by any means a full computer. It's a second display for your phone.
Yes. And
who needs a second display?
Exactly. The people who should be getting excited about this, I don't see getting excited about it. And that's what worries me and makes me think that there's no way they're going to sell 20 million.
I kind of agree with you. On the other hand, betting against Apple has never done well for me.
Not recently.
Not in a long time. So these guys seem to have the glitter, gold dust, something.
Well, they're bound to slip up eventually. Jason is totally right that when there are unexpected or unrealistic expectations out in the market, that's when you see a story that leaks.
I think
that says, well, that's a little bit much, right? Just to because you don't want unrealistic expectations if you're Apple. You want to manage that.
I think that this is not the watch that Apple wanted it to be. We saw the story in the Wall Street Journal, again, probably leaked from Apple, but no, who knows, that said that they wanted to have more health sensors, but for battery reasons, technology reasons, and FDA reasons, they couldn't put all those health monitors into it. And I think Tim Cook saying Apple's watch will replace your car keys is a great example of lowering expectations. It's like, okay. Huh? Because I have a fob. Is that what he's talking about? And that wouldn't they have to make a deal with the car company before that would happen? And how many car companies have they made that deal with? And that's just, if this is the selling point, this isn't going to make it.
Their biggest competition is not other smartwatches, which are all, you know, even these ones that have come out at MWC, they look nice. I mean, they look really great.
I like my Android Wear watch. I think it does.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not more than a second screen, but I can talk to it just as I'll be able to.
But they don't compete, at least unless you consider it sort of secondarily. Those watches work on Android. The Apple Watch works on Apple stuff. Almost no watch works on both. And if it does something like the Pebble, the APIs are so much richer on Android, and right. Apple's never going to let Pebble have access to what the Apple Watch has access to. So really, what this is about is how many iPhone users are there out there who are using the 5 and beyond, because that's what it's compatible with,
and how many of them
want to buy this accessory feeling that it will upgrade their iPhone experience.
That's your total market.
How big is that market? It's a big market. I mean, you've seen the volume of iPhones that Apple has sold.
They sold 175 million this year.
It's a lot. But,
so it's a lot.
But
no, 75 and a half million.
That's an expensive accessory. So that's the question.
So there are hundreds of millions.
It's a big market, though. There are a lot of people who won't want expensive accessories to Apple products. I'm not one of them. There are much better ways of monitoring your health than to wear an Apple Watch.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think all of these watches are just glorified pedometers and maybe a heart rate monitor, although they're not, my experience has been very accurate.
I think 10 million.
I've seen, for instance, that...
You think they'll sell 10 million in 2015?
In 2015, I think they'll sell 10 million.
And that would be disappointing for Apple, not so disappointing for most people. I'll sell 10 million anything. And by the way, $349 is a starting point. What do you think the price points will be? Any ideas?
Oh.
What's the stainless steel going to be?
700.
Twice as much. And then the gold is going to be thousands,
15,000.
Right? Yeah. What? 15,000?
10, 15, yeah. 20.
Not six, not seven?
Gold Rolex will cost you 10 or 15, right?
Exactly. Those luxury watches are all 10,000 or more.
There's a fundamental difference. Your Rolex is going to last years and you can give it to your kids.
Right.
Your Apple Watch.
I've got my dad's Rolex, but it's possible that the Apple Watch Edition will have some sort of trade-in. Something
I think they're going to have to if they expect to sell it for that
much. It's got a whole package, right? The box that it comes in is itself a charger. I mean, it's going to be – it's like super valet version of Apple Watch.
Apple has already put safes in their stores. They never had safes before, even though those little computers are thousands of dollars. So that might lend credence to having maybe a few $15,000 items in the store in the back.
Yeah.
They also might be putting in carpet because Johnny Ive said, well, I would never buy an Apple Watch without carpeting. That sounds like a hint that the Apple stores are going to... So as soon as you see carpet...
Maybe there'll be like a velvet rope, and then behind there's carpet.
If they're doing this March 9th, you think it'll be April 9th?
I don't know.
It can't be much later than that.
I would... Look, if they say March 9th, my guess would always
April
be
1st.
It'll be a week from the following Friday. So it would be the... What is that? The 21st or something like that. But they said it would be April.
Right.
So maybe it's a little bit longer. I don't know.
Jerry, what's the most you'd spend on a wristwatch?
On a wristwatch?
Yeah.
I spend about $75 on an aviator's watch from Japanese companies.
And you've had that probably for years.
I've had some watches. Yeah, they usually typically last me about 3 years. I buy a watch that's good to 3 atmospheres water pressure. And
and it tells the time pretty well?
It tells the time very well.
So
they all do.
It's only a quarter, actually less than a quarter of what the lowest price Apple Watch would be.
Yeah.
I think Apple's real challenge is they've yet to show anything that this will do that is like, oh, I got to have it, right?
If I want to monitor my health, I'll buy one of these gadgets from the kids that are making them now that do take a blood sample. And not only do the sugar, but about 90% of the everything else that they do in labs.
Right.
You just put your finger in it, won't go, and it connects to your computer, and there it goes. And it's a box about the size of my diabetes shooter sugar meter. This is they're not going to do that with Apple. And I can get it for a lot less than the Apple Watch. Right.
Yeah, I've kind of said this before, but I'll say it again. When they first announced the Apple, I would have been more excited about this if it was less of sort of an old school watch and more of there was some great concept art that a couple of people did on like a Nike Fuel Band with more of a longer display
that
had some interesting touch gestures and all of that kind of thing. I think something like that broke the mold a little bit would have been. They would have sold a lot more. They probably would have, it probably had a lower price point. You know, it would have been like $199 or something like that.
Here is a watch. Like Swatch has announced a smartwatch, the Touch 01, for volleyball players.
Yep.
They're going to own the volleyball player market on this one. It's got an ice cream cone on the front.
Yeah. It looks pretty cool. It's they're like out pebbling Pebble with their, their look there. I think that this is a lesson that is worth applying to the Apple Watch too, which is, you know, Apple's not trying to reach everybody. They are trying to reach a portion of
rich
people who've already bought the iPhone. We already know the iPhone is the hot in the high end smartphone market.
Which one are you going to buy?
And they do pretty well. Well, I really wish that that stainless steel model was not going to be 700. If it was 500, or I don't know, it's going to be the cheap one because I'm going to be cheap and I'm going to buy
the
cheap
one.
I think that's what. But I like the look of the stainless one. It's. I think the Apple Watch is water resistant. Although Tim Cook, this is how crazy Apple Kremlinology is right now. Tim Cook mentioned that he wears his Apple Watch in the shower, and that made everybody say, "Oh, well, it may be more waterproof than previously understood to be." Okay, whatever. But I would say water resistant is the safe bet. You can get it wet, but don't go diving.
More battery news? The last week. Yeah. Cook said it was going to last a day.
Yeah, well, so Brian Chen in the New York Times, former Macworld editor, actually, proud to say, he reported, he's got some good sources, and he reported what seemed to be maybe controlled leaks about the battery life, that they're planning a mode that is an extreme low power mode that actually displays the time, because I think they were all worried about this idea that basically the screen's off unless you jiggle it.
Right, that's how most Android Wear works.
But to get save battery life, to save battery life, that you know a lot of watches do that.
Right.
So it sounds to me like they're still targeting, you know, you can use it for a whole day and that
watch.
You'll be able to see it. So we'll see. But it seems to be that Apple's trying to express that they are going to hit their battery life goals. We'll see.
They're not the only ones. Swatch announced a new one. And Philippe Kahn's company that does the Motion X accelerometers that are in many of the fitness bands has announced a partnership with luxury Swiss watchmakers, Mondaine, Alpina, and Frederic Constant.
Oh, they're very good.
This is a horological smartwatch.
Mm.
Make your own joke there. And these will be, they'll look just like the quartz watch they've been making for a long time. Battery life of 2 years, but the ability. What's wrong with my? The abitness. They'll have the abitness to track your fitness. They'll like Jawbone or fitness trackers. That's because of Philippe's company. The company Full Power, Philippe Kahn, who is a character, said, I'm sure Jerry has some great stories about him, said, there's a group of people that'll buy anything.
Yep, that sounds like Philippe.
Yep. That's a way to announce a smartwatch. It'll cost thousands of dollars. So there you go. And that's not all. Pebble has announced its newest color watch. They call it color. What do they call it? Color screen time.
Pebble time.
And they're using Kickstarter again. Oh, I gotta see. I gotta see what they're up to.
How many of our listeners are likely to be worried about Apple watches?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know.
$11.8 million so far.
Okay, so this is crazy. So you remember that the first Pebble watch was one of the very earliest Kickstarter successes, mm-hmm. raised $5 million. Yeah. It blew everybody away in a month. That created the Pebble watch. 5 days in, they were looking for $500,000. They've got $11.7 million.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell? Shows that Kickstarter is now basically a pre-ordering service, because you're not like investing it or fostering a new innovation. You're just saying, hey, I got to get that watch.
And let's put this in perspective. It's about 60,000 watches that they've sold, which is nice for them.
That's
really
good
for them. 60,000.
They claim a million total of the original Pebble. So,
Well, they've been selling that for 2.5 years now.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had a Pebble for 2 years.
Would you want
Kickstarter
this?
Kickstarter was delayed. It's what I said before. I like my Pebble, and I've enjoyed my 2 years with it. But as an iPhone user, they are really limited in what they can do, because Apple, all watch features Apple is putting into the iPhone are geared toward the Apple Watch. And if I'm going to use an iPhone and I want a smartwatch, I'm going to need the Apple Watch. If I'm using Android, I think it's really compelling because it's not one of these lasts for a day color screen kind of, you know, backlit LCD screen kind of deals. This is their e-paper. It's not e-ink. It's e-paper. Yeah. It's like an LCD screen, color LCD, and it lasts a week. And it does use some of the Android Wear APIs, so it does have good integration with Android. And I think it's compelling, and it's cheap. It's not, you know, it's not a super expensive model. So it's kind of compelling.
I wanted to see somebody put this image of the watch side by side with an Apple Watch when it comes out. And just, yeah.
Put it next to the gold one just for kicks.
Apple will sell more in 1 month than Pebble has sold in its whole lifetime. And I'm a skeptic of the Apple Watch, obviously. Right. But Apple will sell more in 1 month than Pebble sold the whole time. But Mijikowski, I sat next to Eric Mijikowski, the CEO of and kind of founder of Pebble at CES at a dinner last year. And he said something so compelling, I thought, which is we're not competing with, other smartwatch makers, really. You know, there are people who are going to like our product. We do certain things well. Other products, you know, do their thing. He said, we're competing with people who don't want to wear watches anymore. And I think that's still the case, and it's going to be the case for Apple Watch just as much as it is for Pebble and others. It's competing with the fact that fewer and fewer people are wearing watches because, you know, it's one thing that you can get rid of with your smartphone that you don't have to have. You know, the smartphone has consolidated so many different devices, so many different things, the functions of so many different tools, and the watch is one of them. And so getting people to put a watch back on is probably unlikely. But kind of like what Jason Snell was saying was that what they're really going after and where, you know, they're making a bet is that of those sort of, you know, almost 200 million people that bought an iPhone last year that's going to be compatible with this thing, that a pretty high percentage of them, all they need is, you know, 5% of them. 5 to 10% of them who already do wear watches and want to have a smartwatch and are willing to, you know, shell out money for an accessory, and they've got a great market.
You know, I think you're totally right that the number one competitor for every smartwatch is not wearing a watch. That is number one. Number two is maybe the competition, but number one is I don't want to wear a watch. Right. What I will say is I totally get watch skepticism. At the same time, there was a time when people carried watches in their pockets, and then they started strapping them on their wrists, and pocket watches went away because people thought it was more convenient to look at something on their wrist. That could happen again. That could totally happen. I'm not saying it will, but it could. There are some advantages to glancing on your wrist instead of pulling something out of your pocket.
Let me point out that your real competition is with people like me who don't want to take the damn thing off at night.
Yeah.
Or when they take a shower, or when they go swimming, or take a bath. Who just want to put it on and leave it there and have it tattooed on if I knew how to do it and give it keep time.
Now that's a business, maybe the subdermal wash.
You could,
I like
with
that.
With the Pebble, you could wear it for a week and shower with it and everything, and it would still work. You just every now and then you'd need to be near an outlet once a week for a couple hours to plug it in. But you could keep it on while you did that.
If they put a Tamagotchi in my Apple Watch, I'm buying it. I want a virtual pet.
That'll be an app.
Maybe they have an e-paper on your wrist. Maybe they have e-paper on your wrist, and it could be like that Motorola thing
concepts,
where you like swallow a pill, and like that powers.
Mm-hmm. We've seen concepts where those
tattoo displays.
Yeah.
Is there any chance that the Apple Watch will let you talk to Siri without taking the phone out?
Yes.
Of your pocket?
Yeah, it's got a microphone on it, and you can actually just raise it to your wrist
Siri,
up and say, hey, Siri, whatever.
Oh, geez,
I just set off everybody's iPhone. Sorry about that.
Now, if it actually lets you talk to your phone without taking the phone out and holding it in your hand, then there starts being some practical reasons to have it.
I could do with the Android Wear Watch. When I get a text,
says,
I can
hey,
respond.
Hey, Siri, would you this, that, and the other?
Right. But the Android Wear watches do that.
Yeah.
It has a limited subset of commands.
Yeah,
but you
and Pebble Time will do that, too. Pebble Time's got a microphone that'll work with Android.
I do sometimes. Actually, that's one useful thing. I'll get a text. I'll feel a buzz. I can read it, and then I can swipe right, and I can speak my response. And I do that at least once a day.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's something I would go out and spend a lot of money on.
I think there is a possibility that what these smartwatches will do is reduce our need to pull our phones out of our pocket and do this for a while.
Thank God.
And that might not be bad. If you were like glance, flip, and then you move on to the next thing, maybe that would be a good thing.
That is such an such a
if
burden.
Got a decent speech to text, speech to command language capability.
Well, we were talking about the Amazon Echo, which you and I have both ordered it, Jerry, which is that little black tube that sits in your in your room. And
yeah.
You know what? There's something compelling about this, maybe because of years of sci-fi and HAL 9000 and all that. But I just like the idea of a little plastic pal that's fun to be with. I want to be able to talk to my little friend and ask him questions.
Nice reference.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back. There is a lot more to talk about, including a landmark decision from the FCC. That's why Jerry is here, to school us all on why this is a bad idea. Before we do that, though, let's talk about a brand new sponsor. We're welcoming ShipStation to the TWiT network. I first found out about ShipStation when I used it on Squarespace. This is so cool. If you do fulfillment, if you ship things, ShipStation.com. It could take your orders from eBay, from Amazon, from Etsy, more than 50 popular marketplaces and shopping carts. Easily create shipping labels for all the top carriers. You see them right there, UPS, FedEx, of course, the Postal Service. You'll get a free U.S. Postal Service account that gives you access to deeply discounted shipping rates, the same rates that in the past only Fortune 500 companies have been able to get. ShipStation.com, it is the number one choice of online sellers, and they have an incredible 98% customer satisfaction rating. If you do fulfillment, even international shipping with DHL, you'll get the best prices, best service. It couldn't be easier. I mean, it's completely automated. And right now, and I really want you to take advantage of this, you can try it for free for 30 days and get an additional 30 days when you use the offer code TWIT. 60 days total. Go to ShipStation.com. Before you do anything else, click the microphone. It's a little tiny one right at the top of the page there, a little tiny, little itty-bitty microphone. And do enter in TWIT as the offer code, and you'll turn that free 30-day trial into a 60-day trial, and you will love it. ShipStation.com. We really like technology companies that make life easier, and this is one. If you do any shipping at all, you must use ShipStation.com. Okay. We came in, actually was just here by chance. Was it Wednesday morning? Tuesday? Thursday. Yeah, it was my day off. I happened to be here. I was doing a thing on Marketplace. And by the way, if you haven't heard of the Marketplace Tech, it was fun. They do a number thing. We have a little contest. I did that on Thursday for Friday's air, and I happened to be here. And then I noticed that the chat room was talking about the FCC. They were streaming the hearing live for one of the most important votes, actually two of the most important votes the FCC has ever made. A little history on this. The chairman of the FCC, Tom Wheeler, who John Oliver called a dingo because he said letting Tom Wheeler watch over the internet is like letting a dingo watch your baby. Tom Wheeler, former Hall of Famer. No, actually still a Hall of Famer for the National Cable Association, for the Wireless Association, a lobbyist appointed by Barack Obama to be chairman of the FCC, had attempted, as his predecessor had, Julius Genachowski, to create open internet rules. Verizon sued. The FCC was thwarted. The judges in that case said, well, look, and this is well known, the FCC can only do what Congress tells it. It has the power to do. It has to have a congressional mandate. The FCC said, you know what, Verizon's right. You can't promulgate open internet rules. You have no jurisdiction. But the court did an interesting thing. Sometimes they do this. They gave him a hint. They said, now, were you to invoke the Telecommunications Act and declare broadband providers to be telecommunications companies instead of information services, as you have declared them, you would have standing, you would have jurisdiction, you could tell them what to do. FCC put on its thinking cap. Tom Wheeler asked for comments, got 4 million comments, swamping the FCC.gov site. The vast majority of those comments coming partly because of John Oliver's piece on This Week Tonight, but also EFF and Epic and many of the other organizations. They got a brief from many big tech companies, all of them promoting this use of the Telecommunications Act and Title II of the Telecom Act to declare that broadband companies were telecommunications providers. We had a debate. We had two ISPs, one Dane Jasper from Sonic.net, who said, I, for one, welcome Title II regulation. Another small ISP from Laramie, Wyoming, Brett Glass, who said, oh, my God, you don't want that. Glass has already tweeted, I'm going to sue. AT&T has said, I'm going to sue, because on Thursday, the FCC voted along party lines 3-2 to adopt Title II regulation. They declared broadband companies to be telecommunications companies. They say, we have a 300-page document. One of these days, we're going to show you.
We'll let you read it someday.
Yes. We'll let you read it. That will be the rules. They had a second vote, which I think was in some ways equally important and maybe shows that their hearts are in the right place, saying that they were going to restrict the abilities of state legislatures to prevent municipal internet access. Towns like Chattanooga have really done a great job of providing gigabit internet access to their residents. 20 state legislatures, at the behest under the lobbying of the telecom companies, have made laws prohibiting that. The FCC says, we're going to overturn, we're going to re-regulate those out of existence, and we're going to give, because I think we all agree, Jerry, you I'm sure agree, the best way to solve this is with real competition. It's just something we don't have right now. There are only, for 86% of the Americans, two choices, your phone company or your cable company for high-speed internet.
But at least that's two choices.
Well, it's more
right
than one.
Now, with Title II, you understand Title II is a 1920. Excuse me.
It was written before you were born. That's how old it is, ladies and gentlemen.
From copper telephone days, when copper was expensive to run. Now, it gives them a right to, among other things, forbid content. Well, why do you? It used to be there's a federal crime about cursing over the telephone. They don't enforce it anymore. They've said, well, we have all these rights now to regulate and to set prices and to license websites.
Well, they have said that we would have the power to do that.
Go to the FCC.
They've said they will not use forbearance.
We're not going to do that.
Right.
You understand we won't do it. We just have the power to do it. Isn't that nice? Now, one thing I can assure you, regulators like to regulate. And if they can regulate something, they will regulate something. Now, exactly what problem is this giving them title to? Would you want Ma Bell back again to run the internet?
Well, isn't
because
that what we
what
have?
You've got now.
Right. We have Ma Bell and Comcast running the internet, Jerry. And by the way, they are solving a problem. Comcast and Verizon put the screws to Netflix, saying if you would like to reach our customers, you're going to have to give us more money.
Yes. Look, if I'm... excuse me. If I do nothing but download movies all day, and you do nothing but just ordinary communication with people, should we pay the same rate?
This is one of the things that I Ben Thompson, who's been on this show from Stratechery, yep, said is he likes this ruling, but he says it will lead to metered access where
yes,
you pay for more bandwidth, which is probably the right thing to do, but that's where this will probably lead.
What you don't want, though, is a cable-like situation where, and I think this, see, my feeling is that Comcast, Verizon, AT&T, quite rightly, are acting as a business. They're attempting to maximize profit for their shareholders. And, of course, the best way to do that would be to charge for access to internet providers, people like Twit. We are a content creator. I can see them coming to me and saying, you know, our customers are watching a lot of Twit. You better start paying us if you want a decent performance. This would prevent that. Now, maybe we will have to change how we think about pricing.
Leo, the president of AT&T a long time ago said that you're using my pipes and they're going to have to pay for doing it. But he didn't do it because competition kept him from doing it. The way to accomplish what you want out of internet neutrality is to have competition. But what you've given is the right of censorship.
But you agree we don't have competition, right?
We don't have as much as we'd like, but on the other hand, 10 years ago, we didn't have any.
I don't see much competition right
now.
You
are right in the
beginning. If 86% of Americans have two choices, both of which are big companies, their cable company, their phone company, who have already shown that they're predisposed to, you know, squeeze them for as much as they can get, I don't think that's a competition. Now, I think we all agree that fostering competition is a good thing. And that was the second vote, something. And I think that's a good thing.
Adam Smith said in Wealth of Nations, Adam Smith's first book, there never was a time when two capitalists sat down to have tea, but that the conversation turned to how to make government restrict competition with them.
Right.
He didn't put it quite that way, but that's what he said. Do you really believe that you, as opposed to a lobbyist for Comcast, will have more influence over the FCC when it's all done?
I think there's evidence that we did. I think Tom Wheeler, who is, in fact, was for a long time a lobbyist for both wireless and cable, probably didn't want to do this, but received 4 million comments. And I think those 4 million comments swayed the president, who does have to get elected. It does appoint the chairman of the FCC, and ultimately I think the president swayed the chairman of the FCC to listen to the people. So I do think we have a lot of power, in fact, in this regard. Ultimately, we elect them or unelect them, and as long as people care, the citizens of the internet care about internet access, we have no sway with Comcast. We have no sway with AT&T. There's no question about that. It's supposed to be a government by the people, for the people, and I think we ought to act as if it is. And we do need
local government.
You would agree that some regulation is necessary. You'd agree that antitrust laws, for instance, are necessary.
I would love antitrust laws. But now, for instance, in the first place, you understand the Congress, as soon as it gets past the veto power of Obama, is going to take all this away. The Congress has made it very clear they did not intend for Title II to apply to the Internet. The Internet grew by having essentially no regulation, or damn little. So you're dealing with a temporary situation, and in fact, by the time it can be implemented, it probably won't have, will have changed the administration.
Well, and the courts are obviously, we know that AT&T's already filed a brief to sue, so it's going to, the lawsuits will happen as well.
In one sense, this is a moot point, because by the time this stuff gets to the courts, we'll have had another big election, and you'll find out whether your 4 million comments were really comments from people who just suddenly spontaneously sent them, or they were kind of curried by the people who wanted that kind of content.
I think that I think
Congress intended, for instance, for Chattanooga not to be able to provide wireless to its people.
They actually provide fiber. And, you know, minute the city of Philadelphia inaugurated municipal Wi-Fi, Verizon went to the Pennsylvania state legislature and made them knock it off. And that's happened in 20 states. I think that you're right. If people say government sucks, regulations suck, we have nothing to do with it, if they take the cynical route, you're right. But I think this is a case where people are starting to realize the citizens of the internet care an awful lot about this stuff. And I think we are voters, and we are going to vote this.
Well, I agree. I think we're still going to be talking about this in 20 years.
If you give government power, it will use it.
Yeah. This is an ideological discussion. You and I differ on our views of government, and that's always going to happen.
No, I mean, they'll use it for what they think is good.
Yeah, but we differ on that. But I don't think. But that's an ideological or a political discussion. And I think that there's a very clear path here that we need to follow, or we are not going to get the internet we deserve. Jason, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that in one sense, I would. We were talking about this. We've talked about this a lot, obviously. You know, in our
and on this show, and UN, I'm sure everybody has.
And I've noticed that more and more users kind of tune out a little bit. And I think that one of the reasons they do is they expect, and I think they're right, is that we're still going to be talking about this in 10 years. We may still be talking about it in 20 years. Because if we agree that, as it now is, that the internet is a vehicle of public good, and it is, and there are now services, goods and services, but especially and government services and other things that you cannot access unless you have a decent connection to the internet, or cannot access as well, or research, or anyway, all of those things are true. And the internet is a function of public good. And the question now is, if that vehicle of public good is in the hands of private companies in a society, like in a capitalist society like ours, there is going to be a natural tension over to what they should do and what they can do, what they can't do, and what we want them to do. And so as long as that is the case, as long as, you know, this vehicle of the public good is in the hands of these private capitalistic companies, then, and, you know, the people have an idea of what they, you know, this trust that they're giving them to something that is now integral to the lives of everyday people to live their lives and to do many of the things that they need to do. You know, we're going to be having this debate indefinitely.
Well, I think, I mean, and I understand the fear I think everybody shares of government run amok and regulating the internet out of existence, or limiting the kinds of content, or charging license fees to people like me. And that would be a bad thing. If you think that's going to happen, then I can understand your concern.
But at the same time, I mean, I'm concerned that a lack of net neutrality eliminates competition in innovation on the internet, right?
This company, my company, would not exist if the internet did not allow anybody to use it freely.
Well, and let's say you make a deal with Comcast, and then there's a great competitor coming up that wants to take to eat your lunch.
The incomparable has no shot at all.
You've got the deals. I can't win there. Yeah.
Right.
All right. Any final Jerry, we're going to give you the final word.
Never were two capitalists sat down to have tea, but what they discussed, how to get government to eliminate competition. Not between them. They'll live with that. But newcomers, we don't need those. This is really giving the government the power to decide who can compete. Now, if that's a good idea, fine. The easiest way to do it, of course, it's a licensed website.
I think that's a non-starter. I don't think that's ever going to happen. But let me ask you what you would prefer.
They have the power now.
They have the power. It's never going to happen. What would they prefer? What would you prefer? I mean, you could make up all sorts of perils that might happen. It's never going to happen.
I only point out that they have the power.
Yeah, but you don't think it's actually going to happen, do you?
Then for God's sakes, have a Net Neutrality Act that specifies what they can do.
I'd love to see that.
Not one that says they can do everything, and so anything you do is all right, but you really shouldn't just license websites and things.
Nobody's going to license websites, Jerry, but if the Congress could write a good net neutrality, I mean, you said Congress will overturn this. They will.
Probably.
And if they overturn it with a good net neutrality rule and say, FCC, here are the rules, would you be happy with that?
Except that if they do it in the next 2 years, the president will veto it.
I don't know that that's a given. I think President Obama knows he's on the hook for net neutrality. He's campaigned on those grounds. He's made a very strong statement that he wants to support it. You think he'd veto it?
What? He would veto any act that changes the FCC's power right now, I think. He said he would, but we'll see. I want to see a very definite limit to what the FCC can make you do.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked at radio for years where the FCC has a lot of power and sometimes is not well loved because of their ability to fine people for using bad words and other things. And yet, FCC regulation of radio has not really been a problem. I think it's gone quite well, frankly. But I certainly don't relish the notion they might regulate websites or regulate podcasts.
So the government did really well making Ma Bell.
Well, we could debate over who made Ma Bell. I think Ma Bell made Ma Bell.
Now, that would be wonderful, but it's not likely to happen. I just don't think that the government allowed the telephones progress the way it could have been. I think if the government had been in charge of the Internet in 1990, we wouldn't have the Internet we have now.
Well, that may be true. That may be true. They certainly screwed things up by creating these duopolies, although I believe they did it under pressure from the companies who said, we're not going to invest on infrastructure unless you make sure we have a monopoly. So what would you like to see, Jerry?
I'd like to see what we've got now. It's working so far.
Okay. We're going to take a break. Actually, before we take a break, let's take a look at what happened this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
It's a water filter in the form factor of a straw. But we apparently have basin water here.
Oh, my God.
Tech news tonight.
The U.S. Federal Communications Commission today voted in favor of net neutrality in the United States.
The ayes have it. The item is passed.
In the year leading up to today's vote, a record 4 million citizens sent in comments, most of whom were in favor of net neutrality.
Security Now.
The worst thing that Commodia has done, the password that protects their private key that's in the Superfish software installed on Lenovo laptops and 100 other software products, is Commodia.
Twit. Friends don't let friends miss Twit.
Because this one took 50 hours and this one took about 25 hours. So if those were to get erased, I would be pretty upset.
Oh, no.
That got erased. That's okay. No, it's not.
I'm so sorry.
That video, if you're listening, you're going, what happened there? That was from Toy Fair, Ohio Art. It makes the Etch-A-Sketch, had an Etch-A-Sketch artist there who would sometimes spend days twiddling the knobs to do cityscapes and all sorts of things. And Dick asked him, well, what happens if somebody shakes it? He said, oh, don't worry. We drill holes, and we let all the aluminum filings fall out of the Etch-A-Sketch, so you could shake it all you want. Nothing will happen. Just turn that one over, and you could see the holes. Dick did, and it erased the Etch-A-Sketch. Yeah. There were holes, but apparently they'd neglected to empty the aluminum filings out. The guy wasn't too devastated. He said, oh, well, that was only about 10 hours of work. I'd have been a little... And by the way, we're sending Chad to the doctor after drinking Petaluma River water. We think he's going to be okay. He's had no ill effects so far.
R.I.P. Chad.
R.I.P. Chad. He's got a new slogan. Hey, does Mike Elgin have a week ahead? Let's take a look. Mike Elgin, our news director. What's coming up this week?
Not much coming up this week except the biggest show of the year, Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, Spain. Unofficial events are already happening today, but the show officially kicks off tomorrow. I'll be streaming live coverage from the floor, so stay glued to the live.twit.tv site all week and watch Tech News Today every day at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1800 UTC. Back to you, Leo.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, we're going to have some great coverage. Miriam Jouar, as you saw, is already there. Mike is there. This has become one of the most interesting. You know, I think even to rival, not as big as CES, but at least with the announcements, to rival CES in terms of the importance. Now
getting
the mobile
bigger
is
every year, you know, bigger every year.
And you get to go to Barcelona, so there's that.
Can't beat that.
Love to be there right now. Man. You notice I've got snacks. When friends have a disagreement, the best solution is to break out snacks. I wish I could send you some of these, Jerry. Do you like snacks?
Yeah.
Who doesn't like, what about garlic plantains or cherry vanilla granola? How about jalapeno cashews? These are the ones we've been eating. Sarah and I went through a whole bag of these yesterday. Strawberry Greek yogurt pretzels. Oh, they're so good. Now, this is all from a company called Nature Box. These are nutritionist approved. This is not the snack you're getting out of your snack machine at work. These are deliciously awesome snacks made with great ingredients. No artificial flavors, no artificial colors, no high fructose corn syrup, no trans fats, no artificial sweeteners. Just good stuff that tastes great. Sweet, savory, spicy. You get to choose. They have snacks that are vegan if you wish, or gluten-free. You can choose for dietary needs. I think you're going to love Nature Box. We've set it up so you can get a free trial. 5 of their most popular snacks. Just pay $2 in shipping when you go to naturebox.com/twit. naturebox.com/twit. Twit, jalapeno white cheddar popcorn, cashew power clusters, whole wheat raspberry figgy bars. The fun thing is they're always doing new stuff. So, like, I'd never had these strawberry yogurt pretzels before. These are good. NatureBox.com. So I shouldn't eat it, but I want to eat it, but I shouldn't. Go ahead.
Do it,
eat
Leo.
It
for me. Do it, Leo. Get there.
NatureBox.com. It's hard to do an ad while you're eating. Slash.
That's really good.
Jerry, well, let's get your address so because we'd like to send you some if you don't mind. I think you'd like these.
What do I do?
Nothing. We'll just get you. We'll get your address for an email and we'll send you a nature box. I like to send them to our hosts. You. Have you ever gotten one?
I was just looking up on my
steal your
my
stuff
computer
here.
To see where Nature Box was. What the heck?
They're down the road from you.
Yeah.
They're in L.A. No, hey. No, they're not. They're in San Carlos. They're up here. Mm. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Mm. Oh, see, I tried not to. Couldn't help it.
Nope. They tried to save you.
They're good. Moving on. You know, there's such a debate over the FCC thing. We'll see what happens. I think you're right, Jerry, that the Congress will probably try to do something. We'll see what happens. I liked Verizon's public policy blog, which emphasized, as you did, that these rules came from 1934. They published their response in Morse code, the dominant technology of the era, I guess. Has anybody translated? Oh, yeah, they did.
Snarky.
That's snark. That's snark. let's see. What else is in the news here real quickly? Security. You saw Steve Gibson talk a little bit about the Cambodia virus. This broke last week. We talked about the fact that Lenovo had put adware on some of their laptop systems, the consumer-grade laptops, adware called Superfish. The adware was bad enough, frankly, because what it did is watch everything you did on the internet, use the Superfish technology to match images. So if you go to Amazon and you start looking at, drones, and then put ads onto the Amazon web, additional ads for competitors onto the Amazon web pages. Lenovo's defense was, we thought customers would like that. But worse was the fact that Superfish didn't implement this very well. They, of course, wanted to crack into SSL streams. They couldn't see into those. So they licensed a product called Cambodia, Cambodia. Steve does a great dissection of this on Security Now on our Wednesday episode a couple of days ago. But Cambodia turns out, not only is it so badly written that it's a massive security flaw, but it's used by hundreds, literally, of other programs. How To Geek, which had done a great piece on the download.com site, CBS. I'm sorry, Jason, CBS Interactive's download.com. Can you do anything about them?
No.
No. you're not going to. I would recuse yourself at this point.
I would definitely recuse myself from that discussion.
I keep giving these guys a hard time. So a couple of months ago, they did a great piece. Here's what happens when you install the top 10 apps on download.com. These are programs download.com kind of as a convenience to you offers for download. All of them shareware or freeware from other sources. But download.com wraps this software in their own delivery mechanism. And How To Geek says danger. Do not try this at home. In fact, they used a virtual machine. So they went there and they looked at the 10 most popular downloads: Avast, AVG, KM Player, Yak, C Cleaner, free YouTube downloader, Driver Booster. You know, some of it kind of junky, but most of it pretty good. They downloaded it all, and they were, and by the way, and this is the key, agreed in every instance to accept the additional software that was wrapped around it. It was a mess. Browser hijacking software, adware, none of it technically viruses because all of it had an uninstall feature. In every case, you had to accept it. There was nothing sneaked on your machine, although one might say that some of this was a little surreptitious. So they've done a follow-up on this. And it turns out that two of these programs have Comodia in them. So now you're really screwed. So Comodia is everywhere. What it does is break SSL. And by it does so in about as brain dead a way as you can do it. They do it with the same key for all machines. And they have, a very difficult to deduce password, Comodia. Comodia. So download.com and others are now bundling Superfish style HTTPS breaking adware. Now can you do anything, Jason? Not a word. I don't want to get you in trouble with your bosses. It's not your fault. Tech Republic does not do this.
No.
And just stop using download.com would be my advice. Get the software from the original source. And if you do, actually, apparently somebody's saying that Java, the Oracle download of Java, breaks HTTPS encryption. The LavaSoft Web Companion, which is supported by these offers, according to Oracle.
Oh, dear.
The LavaSoft Web Companion. You also get Results Bay, Chocolate Bar, and Slow PC Fighter. Holy cow. Just a mess. So while I was really upset with Lenovo, I have to point out they're not the only ones. And a lot of this stuff is all over the internet. So stay away. The funny thing about LavaSoft is they're the companies that make AdAware, the ad removal and blocking software, and they use Comodia. A lot of antiviruses apparently use Comodia.
Yeah, it's bad news. I mean, it's bad news. And look, the best thing that we can say is that this came to light, and hopefully companies will change their practices when they've seen sort of the outrage and what's possible, you know, from this, you know, across the board.
Lenovo's feeling it for sure. In fact, this might be some of the good that's come out of it. They did say, we'll see if they do this, that they're not going to put any adware on there. They say, we don't really make that much. We're going to stop bundling adware and trialware entirely.
Good. That'd be a great thing. That'd be a great development.
Wouldn't it? Microsoft tried to do this with the signature PCs, and nobody went along with it. There was very few companies. Vizio did. I don't know I don't think you can get a Vizio.
I forgot they made PCs. That's
right. It was a very brief shining moment. So we'll see. We'll see. Google has turned an about face. This is kind of an interesting development. On Wednesday, we talked about this on Twig. Google had announced that they would ban adult content on Blogger, that if you had adult content, you would have to make your Blogger blog private. They changed their porn policy. This week, we announced a change to Blogger's porn policy. We've had a ton of feedback, a ton of feedback, including, in particular, about the introduction of a retroactive change. Some people have had accounts for 10-plus years, but also on the negative impact on individuals who post sexually explicit content to express their identities. Jessica Poligio, Social Projects Product Support Manager at Google. Blog owners should continue to mark any blogs containing sexual explicit content as adult, so that they can be placed behind an adult content warning page, but we're not going to shut you down.
The problem with this kind of thing is that who decides? You know, there's lots of people, you know, myself included, who don't necessarily want to, you know, look at that kind of stuff or whatever. But the thing is, who decides and what do they ban? And that's where this is such a slippery slope and why, you know, if you believe in free speech and you believe that as part of a just society that, you know, you have to have some freedom of expression, then, you know, you have to question these kinds of things. You know, the great example is Facebook. You know, Facebook had this policy where they were taking down and banning accounts or, you know, censoring accounts of women breastfeeding. But then they were leaving up all kinds of other, you know, sexually explicit stuff, right? So obviously they were making poor choices. And the problem is it's a slippery slope once you decide, you know, that you're going to start banning, because it's like then the questions of who and what is where it gets to be a serious problem. And I don't trust Google to do it any more than I trust Facebook. And so, I think that this is And Apple, the same thing. Like, Apple's trying to have it in their own way in the App Store as well. They maybe do a little bit better job that don't things that don't make news. But there are still things I've heard, you know, behind the scenes where sort of weird things get banned for odd reasons.
Right.
So it's tough. Right. And if you believe in, you know, a free society, you know, has to have a measure of freedom of expression and freedom to be able to publish, you know, then you kind of have to question these kinds of things.
I actually got in a conversation, Jeff Jarvis did, and I was observing it, with a pornographer, on Twitter. And the pornographer said, actually, we would welcome this move from Google.
Really?
We want to keep adult stuff, you know, in an adult place, maybe .xxx or whatever. And we don't want people running across it. That makes it hard for us to do business. And frankly, a lot of the adult content on Blogger and Tumblr is stolen from us in the first place. So we would welcome kind of this decision from these companies to keep adult content off. We wouldn't welcome anybody would say no adult content on the internet, but let's put it somewhere that kids aren't going to stumble on it, and then we don't get all the heat that we get.
Huh.
But I agree with you. I think it's – but what is pornography? What is erotica? What is an expression of art? You know, Leonard Nimoy was a
well,
great –
Well, I'll give you
– Go ahead.
I'll give you an example. You ban various things. Are you going to ban, say, Boogie Nights?
Right, which is a work of art, but sexy.
Plays a porn star, right. And in fact, she is a porn star in that movie. Now, is that an art movie, which most people say it is?
Absolutely.
Or is it just a way of hiding porn?
Right.
And who decides?
Right. Very difficult to do so.
I don't think I want the FCC deciding.
They do decide on radio, don't they? They have those seven words.
Yeah.
I was going to say Leonard Nimoy, who later in his life had a very good career as a photographer, did a number of photography books. One of his books was of large women nudes.
Yes.
And that certainly was not pornography, but might be banned under a policy like this. So I think Google did the right thing. They backed down.
That reminds me of a Leonard Nimoy story that I meant to say earlier when Leonard Nimoy. Since we're getting toward the end, one of the great things that came out, you know, he was sort of notoriously, I don't know, irascible. You know, not necessarily always the friendliest person to sort of be on set with and that kind of thing, but Roddenberry called him the conscience of Star Trek, and I thought there was a really great story that came out. About him, I thought, that would sort of be appropriate in sort of a week where we're remembering him, which was where this was before he was a big star, when Star Trek got started, and he found out, you know, somehow, whatever people talk, you know, what the other stars were kind of making. And he discovered that Nichelle Nichols, you know, African-American woman.
Uhuru.
Was making considerably less than the others, even with similar credentials. And all of that. And he was outraged by it and took it to the studio and spoke up about it and stood up for her and said that, you know, that it was wrong, even though he wasn't a big star. And basically that, you know, that he was going to, you know, he threatened them, you know, at that point in terms of, and awesome. Even though he was not the main star. And it worked and got, you know, Nichelle Nichols.
Awesome.
She talks about it in the People magazine. Kind of thing. But I just think that's a cool story to remember about somebody, you know, that passed away this week that meant a lot to a lot of people in the science and tech space. And, you know, what a cool thing for him to do and stand up and make a difference. And
you see that picture from the space station, one of the astronauts with the live long and prosper sign over the going out the window in the world. That was
over beautiful. Boston, which was Leonard Nimoy's hometown.
Oh, I didn't notice that. That's neat.
Perfect.
Yes. And by the way, the Persnickety chat room says it reminds me. It's Uhura.
Uhura, it is.
Not Uhuru. I just mispronounced it.
At least you didn't call it Star Wars, okay? So small
Which
victories.
I do often. But as
Leo. Turn in your gift card now. Okay, all right.
One has Tauntauns.
Yes.
And Stormtroopers.
Another has Tribbles.
The other one has Tribbles and Vulcan Mind Melds.
Mm.
And Bitter Dregs.
Bitter Dregs.
Bitter Dregs. He wrote that, you know.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the Ballad of Bilbo Baggins.
It's not quite. It's close. We'll take a break, come back with more. I want to hear, Jason, about your book. I know I'm in it, so it's a little self-serving, but I want to hear about that. I want to hear what Jerry Pournelle's up to. Jason Snell, I want to hear about the growth of your fabulous podcast network. If only the FCC could do something about that.
I must be stopped.
That story about Uhuru, Majel Barrett had some influence on that, too. Of course, she became Mrs. Jean Roddenberry.
Yeah, yep. She was the voice of every computer all the way until the latest Star Trek. She was, you know, she passed away recently, but she was still the voice of the computer in every series up until, in every movie.
Working.
But she got involved in that pay controversy, too.
Yeah. And I presume Uhura got her pay raise.
She did. She did eventually get her pay equity, which is brilliant.
Nice.
Wonderful.
This episode of TWIT brought to you by our great friends at Squarespace. My daughter just started her Squarespace site. I'm really proud of her. She had an idea for a website she wanted to create with a friend as a public service. It was going to be a blog. And I told her all the choices. I said, you know, you can get it for free. But she independently, I don't even think she knew that we love Squarespace or they're a sponsor or we use them. Independently came up with Squarespace. She said, Dad, I know it's $8 a month, but is it okay? And I said, yes, it is okay. Squarespace, they wanted a site that would look great, be responsive. They could take donations, and Squarespace can do it. I love Squarespace. And by the way, it's the best hosting ever. Never goes down. The best support ever. Live chat and email support 24/7 from the Squarespace offices in New York. It is affordable, $8 a month. That's all the hosting, plus the great software. And when you register for a year, you even get the domain name. All Squarespace sites are something really important nowadays, responsive. Used to be, remember, you'd have a mobile site and a desktop site? Well, now everybody's on mobile. Screen sizes are all over the place. Responsive is the way. One site fits all. And Squarespace sites do it. They scale to look great on any device. When you upload an image, 9 thumbnails are made so that you automatically have the right size for the right device. It's so great. Every Squarespace site comes with a free online store. And by the way, the e-commerce solution on Squarespace, $24 a month and you get everything, including ShipStation, really is nice. Cover Pages, something new on Squarespace 7, lets you set up a beautiful one-page online presence in minutes. So you can create a landing page for your brand, your personal identity, to promote a product. Squarespace has great apps on the iPhone and iPad and Android devices. In fact, if you're a photographer, I think there's really no better place for you to go to put your portfolio, because not only are you going to get a great portfolio style to look like your style, to fit your aesthetic, but you also get a great portfolio app on the iPad that'll actually pull the images from your site so you can show them to clients. That's all part of Squarespace. I want you to try it. One of the nicest things about Squarespace is you can go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button, and with no credit card, no information, basically an email address, a password, and a name for the site, you've got 2 weeks to create a site. You can import content from your old site. You can really play with all the templates. And, of course, the content is completely separate from the template, so you can try them all, see how your stuff looks, customize your little heart out. Only thing I ask when you decide you want to sign up, and I wish Abby knew this, make sure you use the offer code TWIT. You'll get 10% off your purchase. I think she just signed up without doing that. But that's okay, Abby. That's okay. I'm happy you're using Squarespace. We want to thank Squarespace for their support of This Week in Tech. Squarespace, build it beautiful. That's what Jeff Bridges did. If you haven't visited his dream site yet, it's exactly what you'd expect from the dude. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TWIT. Still kind of trying to figure out the deal with Gemalto. Gemalto, which makes 2 billion SIM cards a year, is used by most of the mobile companies in the world, including, I think, all the U.S. mobile companies, was in the most recent Snowden leaks implicated. I think it was a Snowden leak that they said Gemalto had been hacked by the NSA and had all of the encryption keys for the SIM cards and was able, therefore, to spy on anybody using a phone with a Gemalto SIM card. Gemalto said, whoa, hold on there, wait a minute. Did an investigation, and they did, in fact, say, we detected attacks in 2010 and 2011. Gives us reasonable grounds to believe an operation by the NSA and GCHQ, the British spy agency, probably happened. But they reassured everybody the attacks against Gemalto only breached its office networks and could not have resulted in a massive theft of SIM encryption keys. The operation aimed to intercept the encryption keys as they were exchanged between mobile operators and their suppliers globally. By 2010, we had already widely deployed a secure transfer system, and only rare exceptions to this scheme could have led to the theft. So basically, they say none of our products were impacted. In the case of an eventual key theft, the intelligence services would only be able to spy on communications on second-generation 2G mobile networks. 3G and 4G networks are not vulnerable. So believe what you want. But Gemalto says, didn't happen, and if it did, don't worry, unless you're on a 2G network. Anything else? Oh, we talked about Snapchat a couple of weeks ago with Baratunde and Nick Bilton. Nick's real high on this. The Snapchat Our Stories had just launched. And I actually set up an account and started putting up stories till I realized they're deleted in 24 hours. That's a lot of work for nothing. But big brands got involved, including Yahoo. Katie Couric does a daily newscast on Snapchat. Yes, she does. ESPN, many channels. And apparently these stories are generating a lot of views.
Czech Republic has one.
Do you? You do it?
Yep. We sure do. Lots of stuff on there.
Okay, so are you part of the Discover thing? Like the
no.
No, that must cost a lot of money to get that.
Well, that's they did that for a limited number of partners.
Big partners.
And big partners.
Right.
And you can tell, it's funny, when I look at Discover, when I open that thing up, I hear the voices of a venture capitalist in the background saying, hey, what if we got some big brands and then we got them to produce these short clips about the same piece like Snapchat, and we put those in their own little section on the site? I mean, it totally reeks of that kind of thing because it's so different than the actual experience of what Snapchat is, that Discover feature. And actually, some of it's kind of compelling.
I enjoy the Katie Couric bit. So you can swipe through the newscast, which is kind of interesting.
It really is kind of interesting and fun and innovative. But it's so different than what Snapchat is really sort of about, you know. So
you got to think all the teenagers who use Snapchat are kind of like, what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Teenagers, you know, now because Snapchat's doing the Discover thing and they're sort of getting bigger, you know, teenagers are like, okay, Snapchat's dead. It's kind of like Facebook. Like now all the adults are coming in and like sending them friend requests and stuff. And they're like, okay, that's it. It's over. I've heard that multiple times over the past couple weeks.
Yeah. Teenagers will move on if they think mom and dad are Rousey won in 14 seconds. Boy, I'd be pissed if I did the pay-per-view on that.
Yeah, it was super quick. It was like literally out of the gate. Boom, done.
Was that the big fight or was that a smaller
one? That was the main event.
That was the main event?
Yeah.
It's like probably the Mike Tyson days. Yeah, it's Mike Tyson did that too, right?
Yeah.
Mike Tyson used to
How much
knock
was the pay-per-view?
100
bucks?
I don't know. I went to a friend's house to watch.
Did you?
Yeah. They had a party.
Gina Trapani did too. She loves USC. So I think this is a good use of it. So this is an ESPN headline app. And just like Snapchat, you swipe and you get the next story. I'm sorry. It's loading slowly here. I don't know if that's our network. I think Snapchat does a lot of caching. And because I never use it, it's taking its time. But you get a sense of what this can do. This is the ESPN channel, and these are only live for 24 hours. So what does Tech Republic do?
Yeah, we do more like behind the scenes kind of stuff, about stories that we're doing, talking about things that are going on. You know, we kind of have some humor, do some stuff in the newsroom.
Yeah.
The handle's just the username's just at Tech Republic. You know, it's just kind of some fun stuff, and we do it in stories. And you know, we try to, you know, be a little bit humorous and, you know, lighthearted. A lot of our content's pretty intense stuff about, you know, keeping the world running and making good decisions about technology and all of that. So, So yeah, we try to do it in the spirit of a lot of the stuff that's already on Snapchat, not really around the sort of Discover stuff.
Right. This is the Katie Couric Yahoo News, and she narrates it. They must have some tool for the Discover folks, because this is obviously not produced in Snapchat.
It's a separate CMS. They have a CMS that nobody else has, because, you know, Snapchat, everything else, you have to do it live. You take a video, it's got to be live.
Yeah,
you take a photo, it's got to be live. You can't import photos. You can't import videos. Everything has to be, you know, filmed or snapped from the app itself, and that's part of, you know, the immediacy of that platform. But yeah, these folks are obviously shooting professional videos and uploading them and building them in some kind of CMS that nobody else has access to.
Hey, Jerry, what's your Snapchat handle? I want to add you.
What's this now?
Never mind. I'm just teasing you. And Jason, yours is Tech Republic?
Yeah, Tech Republic. Just is the username.
All right. So I'm going to search. And I should find you. Yeah, my net is down. In fact, I even got the sad ghost, which I've never seen before. Oh. Snapchat has a sad ghost if your internet is too slow.
That's not me, by the way. Ghost. That's my staff member is much more fun and funnier than I am.
Well, so, let me tell you, this is, according to Snapchat, some of these, like this, our story, the Snowmageddon story, 25 million views. Users took screenshots 5,000 times. Many of these views as high as in the millions, at some as high as 27 million. So the Oscars, which averaged 36 million people last week, the Snapchat folks are coming in strong. Pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yes. Same for ours. We were pushing 27 million last week, too.
No, you're not. You lie. I don't know who First Barrel is, but they have 20. So you can actually see the views on here. 20.3 million views. Holy camoly. That is kind of mind-boggling. That also explains why Snapchat is now valued at, what, 20 billion? Some huge number.
It demonstrates something I've been trying to say for some time. There are lots of niches out there. Some are big, some are little. But it doesn't take a very big niche to support you.
Yeah.
I don't have any 20 million readers, but I have enough that they buy 500-600 books a month.
Yeah, nor do we, but you're right. We can make a decent living. Jerry, what are you working on now? You said two books?
Yes, I'm got to an age, and so sort of has Larry, that we do plots and rewrites, and somebody else does all the work of writing the book, but what the heck?
That's what I do.
It makes for a good book, actually, because the plots are good.
Right, and the writing good craftsmanship.
Somebody who knows what he's doing to be the writer.
Yeah.
Steve Barnes is very good.
What are the stories about?
Well, the one with Niven, we're writing a sequel to the Beowulf children's story.
Oh, good.
The first interstellar colony in a slower than light universe. So what happens after about four generations and the equipment you brought with you wore out? And it'll be pretty good, especially since there are some very interesting aliens in our book. The other one, you haven't got interstellar travel yet. We've just got asteroid colonies. And there's a 12-year-old girl whose father has invented a little better spaceship, and the government wants it. And it will be an interesting story as to what she does.
You know, it's funny you say there are interesting aliens in your book, because Jason Heyer has some interesting aliens in his book as well. He's doing a great book called Follow the Geeks, which is being released online chapter by chapter. Chapter one was Baratunde, right?
Baratunde Thurston, yes. Chapter one. It was
amazing. That gone now?
It is. And so we release them. The book will be released later this year. You know, we haven't released the people that are in it is kind of the fun part. You know, we kind of release them, you know, a few weeks before or a few days before, actually, we announce them before we release the chapter. Yeah. And as we release the chapter, when we announce the chapter and we release the chapter, we take the previous chapter down. And so It gives you a chance to read it. We reel it up for a few weeks until the next chapter, and you know, a few weeks to a month until the next chapter is available.
Nice.
It's not just me. I have a co-author, Lindsay Gilpin. We're co-writing it, and it's one of the coolest, funnest things that I've ever done. And so I'm enjoying it a lot. Enjoying the idea of trying to release a book and you know, really take advantage of the power of the internet. Because one of the things that we're doing when we release these chapters is we're asking people's feedback. You know, what did you relate to in this story? What was the part that you thought was most significant in their story? What were the most important insights from their life, from their story, that you know you think will influence the future of tech, of society, you know, of business? And then we're going to take the best comments, the best stuff. And when we release the final version of the book, we're going to publish the best comments at the end of each chapter. And so people have a chance to have their voice included in the book as well.
That is really neat. So the good news for fans of the Twit Network is Baratunde Thurston's chapter one. Chapter two, Lisa Bettany, mostly Lisa.
Lisa Bettany, yes.
We love Lisa.
She's amazing.
What do I do? Google Follow the Geeks?
Yeah, it's followthegeeksbook.com, Jerry.
Is the site, and then on Twitter, it's just at Follow the Geeks, yeah.
So Lisa's chapter's up?
Lisa's chapter's up. That just went up last week, so that will be up a little while longer. It's a great read. You know, her story's amazing. I think what a lot of people didn't realize is, you know, what a tumultuous story she had. So many challenges and so much adversity she had to overcome at different parts of her life. And that really was something that we talk a lot about in the chapter. And she was great. She was really open about it and, just gave us some great material from her life. And it was a lot of fun. She's an amazing person, very inspiring person. Same thing with Baratunde. So inspiring. Lots of adversity he's overcome as well. And they both used those things to do very unique, very innovative things. They were both out front of a lot of trends and setting trends, and that's a lot of what we end up getting to in each of their stories, in each of their chapters.
Well, yeah. We adore Lisa Bettany, and she's done very well. Moved back, I think, to Vancouver, right?
Yeah, Victoria.
Victoria, right. Much prettier.
What is the logic of taking the first chapter down?
After we've put them up. So the idea is we want each one to kind of be special. We want to focus all the attention on one chapter at a time and have people and also, have there to be some urgency to read it for that period that it's up.
Are you sure that's wise?
No.
I would myself think that is not wise. If somebody sees there's a fourth chapter, they'd never heard of it before, but they can't get the first three chapters.
Yeah,
the incentive for reading the fourth?
Each of the stories, the reason, Jerry, I was kidding when I said no, the idea, we have thought this through a lot. I mean, the idea is each chapter does stand alone. Each chapter is the story of one innovator and their story, in particular. And so our hope is that you get to chapter four and you read chapter four and you say, this is amazing, I'd like to read more of this, that they'll, pre-order the final book and say, okay, I want to read the rest of these stories. But one of the things that, we've done is, in nonfiction, you typically take a year to research a book and then you write, that book. And so by the time you get to, that you're 2 years removed from when you, originally started this thing and when the book publishes, and a lot has happened and changed in their life. And so, our thought is to release these as we go, then, the information that we have in them is very current, is very up to date. And
I can see publishing them chapter at a time. I don't see taking them away.
Taking them down?
I think a little urgency is not a bad thing. Yeah. Means you got to go read it. I put off reading Baratunde's story, and now I'm kicking myself. So I think that's, it's not a bad thing to create a little scarcity, Jerry. You know that.
You can't create scarcity. I just copy the thing off and read it when I feel like it.
Well, if anybody has a copy of the Baratunde chapter. No, I'm going to have to buy the book. More chapters to come. Who else are you interviewing for Follow the Geeks?
Well, the interesting thing is we haven't said, one of the cool things about serial publishing one of the interesting things about publishing that way, and we saw this with the Serial podcast, is it's a cliffhanger, right? You can't wait to see sort of what happens next. And so what we've done is we haven't said who's actually going to be next. And that's part of the fun, is creating a little bit of that interest and urgency. And then we don't really announce it until a couple of days before we're going to release the chapter. And then we say,
cool.
You know, next is going to be chapter three will be ... you know, and then we'll say
how are you
is.
Doing with it?
You know, the great thing is we've gotten so much. We also did a little bit of a crowdfunding campaign to kind of get it started, because we're self-publishing it. To sort of cover the cost of printing, and you know, we're going to do an audiobook, so you know, cover the cost of being able to hire somebody to do the audiobook, and those kinds of things. So the crowdfunding campaign did great. We got the money that we needed to do those kinds of things. And then we've gotten so much amazing feedback from people that the one thing that I didn't expect was how many people honed in on this idea of doing a book in a new way. And how many people were excited about this idea of innovating on the idea of how to do a book, you know, to take advantage of the power of the web, both for, you know, drawing feedback and crowdfunding, and then also, you know, releasing it serially, you know, on our site to sort of generate interest and in immediate give people some immediate access to the information. So that's the stuff that people have honed in on and have really been excited about, much more than I expected. I didn't know, you know, this idea is books have been done the way they've been done, you know, since Gutenberg. And to do it a little differently is kind of a foreign idea. And I've been surprised how many people were excited about that.
And that's one of the cool things about the internet, is the chance to experiment, Jerry. And you know this. You don't know what's going to work. It's a whole new world. Yeah. And so try stuff and see what happens.
Well, it's an interesting pattern. We just change the rules of the Science Fiction Writers of America to allow self-published writers
Good.
To join the organization.
Good.
It took 3 years of debating over it, because it's not a fan organization, and you're not interested in having the members of people who would like to be writers but aren't yet. So it took a long time for them to come up with it, but they came up with something that might work. We'll see. Now I suspect that you're going to end up with more self-published writers than you are with traditional published writers and members.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Agree. Yeah.
Actually, this is not completely novel. I didn't know this. The chat room tells me that William Gibson did a book in the early 90s called Agrippa that disappeared as you read it. So if you read the digital version, it would encrypt each page after reading it. If you read the physical version, the pages were treated with photosensitive chemicals. So as you read it, the words would fade and disappear.
Somebody took pictures of all the pages and OCR'd it and posted it to the internet. I read it that way.
You can still read it. It's not gone forever. But it lasted longer. It lasted longer than a Rousey fight, but not much.
Yeah, there's one.
See, I'm timely. I got the timely reference in there.
There's one,
right?
in a
Is it Rousey?
One of the archives in the UK has a copy of it that's unread that they keep under
that's
lock
nice.
And key as like the permanent, because you can't read it because it'll disappear.
Wow, that's cool. What are you up to, Jason Snell?
Sixcolors.com, writing about Apple and other stuff, and lots of podcasts at theincomparable.com. That's where you can find me most of the time these days.
We love what you're doing. Keep up the good work.
Got some new shows coming, so check it out.
Chat room also gave me this link. Dwarf. Yeah, I know you are, but that's okay, because the FCC is going to protect me.
Yes.
Dwarf bright light on the dwarf planet of Ceres. What is going on? This is from CNET. Jason, you know anything about this? The latest images from NASA's Dawn spacecraft reveal a second mysterious bright spot.
Could be campers.
Could be.
This is the planet that is this in the, where is this? Is in the Kuiper Belt? Where is this planet?
Ceres is the largest asteroid.
Oh, it's an asteroid. Oh, it's in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter.
It's the largest of the asteroids.
Yeah. So it's not a dwarf planet. It's just giant asteroid.
It is a dwarf planet because it's round.
Nowadays, there's a movement to call it a minor planet rather than an asteroid, just as Pluto was downgraded to trying to upgrade Ceres.
Yeah.
What do you think that white spot is, Jerry?
I have no idea. I think it's an artifact myself.
That's what I would guess, too. Yeah.
Some J.J. Abrams lens flare.
A little lens flare. A reflection off an ice cap. All right. Well, we'll leave you with that mystery. Thank you, Jerry Pornell. I am so glad you're feeling better.
Wait a minute. You haven't shown my website.
Oh, well, that we can't.
This is my pledge week.
Is it pledge? You do pledge week?
This is the end of the pledge week. Today.
Well, now, or it's now or never. Go to Jerry.
No, not really.
Go to Jerry Pornell. Jerry, I'm trying to help you here. Go to jerrypornell.com. And where can I pledge?
Go up to the top. This is kind of ridiculous. You see the way it says the view mail? Yeah. I don't know. It drives me crazy sometimes the way they have set this up for me.
I love it. Well, you can
get there eventually.
You should definitely support Jerry. There's a PayPal button right there on the front page at jerrypornell.com. Does it give you access to more material?
Oh, you get, that's a daily thing. You just haven't got it. I don't know what happened. Chaos Manor, try.
Chaos Manor.
Try I don't know.
The web, it's not easy, let me tell you. Here's the Chaos Manor reviews.
Well,
cut short a little bit by ill health. You're going to start writing those again soon?
I've got something up today, for heaven's sake.
Oh, see, I need to become a subscriber.
Yes, you do.
Oh, Jerry, I'm sorry. Here we go. Last chance. It's the public radio model. Three grades of subscription. Yeah. Regular, $20. Patron, $36. Platinum, $100. And you could do it right there. Yeah, you're right. It is kind of hard to find the pay me some money. JerryPornell.com/paying.
You see that first
HTML.
Link there?
I don't know.
The very first link, right in that, where it says the first link you see on there.
Yeah, that takes me to Chaos Manor.
There
Pledge
you go.
Week. Last chance. I'm not after eating
and
money, says Jerry.
And
there you go. That's great. Jerry, such a pleasure. I always love having you on. We're so glad you're doing better. You're doing great. Feisty as usual. Take care, Jerry. Thank you, Jason Snell, sixcolors.com.
Pleasure to be here as always.
Got to do it. Got to read Thank it. You. Come back a week. Oh, no, you're going to be busy.
We'll talk after sometime.
Come back a week from, oh, no, you got an invite, didn't you?
Maybe for Mac Break Weekly. We'll see.
Yeah, you could do it Tuesday.
Yeah?
Yeah. All right. Serenity, be there.
Nice.
Say hi to her. Thank you also, Jason Heiner. Congratulations on the book. I'm so glad it's doing great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
Look forward to future pleasure. Chapters. If they're all Twit hosts, though, I'm going to be a little suspicious.
All I can say is we have some amazing digital innovators to come.
Still to come.
Many of them. Yes.
Many of them. Thank you for joining us. We had a great live studio audience. Thank yourself for being here. We're really happy to have you. Tickets at twit.tv. If you come early, you get a nice chair. If you come later, you get a kind of uncomfortable chair. But we promise a chair for you if you send us an email. Tickets at twit.tv. You can also watch live. We love it if you do. We're on 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2300 UTC, Sunday afternoon, evening. And if you're live, you could join us in the chat room. And as you see, we use the chat room quite a bit. They're really a great resource. We thank you, chat room, for being here and our community all around. If you can't watch live, on-demand versions, audio and video, always available after the fact for all our shows at our website, soon to be remodeled, twit.tv. We're in the middle of that right now. That's why I have all the dust in my hair. Or iTunes or wherever you get your pre-recorded digital content. All the same places The Incomparable is.
Yeah, that's right. Ask for it by name until the FCC steps in.
Till I can get my podcasting license, I'll just have to follow in your footsteps. But we also have great Twit apps, thanks to our developers, Mark Hansen and Craig Mullaney and Dimitri Lialin on all the platforms, Windows, iOS. Yes, Windows Phone. Yes, iOS, Android, even Roku. Craig did that. Great job on that. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can.
Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit, baby.